This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Marcia Mattson. Marcia is a partner at the law firm of Mayer Brown, LLP, and today we're going to, first, Marcia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. Happy to do it.
Oh, well, this will be fun. It may sound like a deadly dull issue, but I think it's a very important one. We're going to talk about transparency and reporting requirements and what's the next wave. And I guess the first question is to just sort of set the stage. Marcia, why should people be interested in transparency and the burdens of reporting versus the public's, you know, interest in knowing what's going on in government contracting?
Well, as you know, this topic's been around for a while at this point. Certainly since the enactment of FFATA.
Can you tell me what FFATA is?
The Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act. The Acquisition Advisory Panel looked at some of these data issues. But as far back as the late 70s, people have been looking at, you know, how to improve the quality of government data, which is part of the discussion here. But a lot of what we're talking about here is probably bureaucratic mechanics and tracking federal spending and understanding appropriations codes and obligations codes and disbursements codes. That's why some people think it might be a deadly topic. Transparency probably means different things to different people. I think to some folks it means the ability of government to get the data it needs in a usable form to make good quality decisions. To others, it means having access to everything the government does. So we've had, really in the last 10 years, a push for more transparency, but I'm not sure there's agreement on what that really means. But there's legislation, again, as I'm sure you know because we're going to talk about it, the Data Act that has now passed the House, and which would dramatically increase government's ability to collect data. We saw a precursor for this with the Recovery Act data collection and reporting requirements, which have now expired. But the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board, also known as the RAT Board, doesn't expire until the end of fiscal year 2012, I guess, 2013. But the perception was that the Recovery Act authorities and the Recovery Act, Recovery and Transparency Board, the RATB, were very successful and that those were limited to Recovery Act funds, but that a government-wide approach was needed. So we have this interest in transparency and more access to information, but there's also another side to it, which is a tremendous interest in some quarters in using that information for detection of fraud, waste, and abuse. And that, again, may be a topic that's in the eye of the beholder.
Right. So I guess it's just like anything, right? Transparency is what, you know, whoever's defining it. Right? I mean, whether it's Congress defining it one way or the executive branch defining it a different way or, you know, some other third party saying this is what data the government ought to be collecting with regard to government procurement. Marcia, is a lot of this data, is it data that the government actually already has in its hands in some manner or form? Is that fair observation?
Well, I think this is where the question is is really interesting, and it maybe raises whether, you know, more work needs to be done to look at what the government already has,
why don't we start obtaining it. Yeah, Marcia, why don't we start by what kind of data are we talking about in terms of?
Well, in terms of the pending legislation, we're talking about all federal spending, unless it's de minimis amounts. So we're talking about all recipients, all agencies, and the Treasury Department as well reporting on federal spending. Now, this is a huge expansion of what the Recovery Act called for and what was done under the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board, the RAT Board. But the government gets a lot of this information already, but it gets it in... It depends on the agency. It depends on the agency's accounting and financial control system. And one of the arguments for the new provisions is that it's very difficult to see any sort of government-wide information that is meaningful to anyone because all the agencies do this differently. And there's that. I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue.
Right. There's There's no sort of standardized sort of format.
Right. So a big part, and I said earlier, this is about, in some respects, bureaucratic mechanics. A big part of what the RATB did, what the GAAP board, which we're going to talk about probably in a minute, Government Accountability and Transparency Board, as well as the pending legislation would do is standardize the data elements, standardize the reporting requirements so that on a government-wide basis, information is more usable. And again, I think, you know, in a sense, it's hard to argue with that. You were a member of the SARA panel.
Right, yeah.
And you know that the SARA panel had a lot of trouble getting data out of FPDSMG, the Federal Procurement Data System, because of the way it was reported.
Right, yeah.
Basic data, like, you know, are task and delivery orders competed? To what extent are they competed?
Even
how much money was going through the system.
Right.
Was very hard to get. And it's a product of DOD uses one approach, GSA uses another approach, HUD uses another approach. So, a lot of the drive for improving the quality of the data is making it just more usable by standardizing the way it's collected and reported. There's a lot of bureaucratic mechanics that go with that. They're not very exciting, but I think it's hard to argue with that. I think the question gets to be, how much are you going to collect? You know, to what level of detail? And how are you going to do it, and how is it going to be enforced on the agencies?
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems to me when we talk about it, sort of the bureaucratic mechanics that you mentioned and all these different agencies or departments that do it different ways, that truly is sort of it's the definition of what's really fundamentally sort of, I don't know if broken's the right word, but everybody wants to do it, you know, they invest in an approach that they think is the best. And so you get these stovepipes across government. When if you came up with a standardized approach, it'd be much more efficient for everybody, including industry, because it costs industry to have different reporting requirements for different agencies, right? They've got to build a system that deals with DOD's reporting requirements, one that deals with Department of Energy, let's say, or even what GSA requires. So it's costing industry money as well, because these reporting requirements flow out to the contractors.
Right, and contractors have to respond to all of this. And so one of the arguments you hear for this legislation is it eventually will actually reduce costs to the recipients of federal funds and to contractors. And that's probably true to some degree because you won't have all these different reporting systems. And on the user side, the data will be much more usable and it'll facilitate better decision-making.
Well, you know, Marcia, right now we do have to take a break. When we come back, we'll start talking a little bit more about the Digital Accountability and Transparency Act of 2012, the act which has passed the House and has moved on to the Senate. We are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need.
all meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Hahn Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Hahn's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Hahn lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Hahn Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. May I help you?
Yeah, my car's entertainment system just isn't cutting it.
Easy answer. Get an HD radio receiver, 100% free digital sound, digital traffic, and great music choices from your local HD2, HD3 radio stations.
Well, what brands do you have?
Best Buy has new expanded HD radio inventory. Alpine, Kenwood, Pioneer, JVC, with prices as low as $120.
Wow, an HD radio digital entertainment center? Show me the way. HD radio. More radio, more value.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, MetLife, and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
At the Jeep brand, we've been on active duty for over 70 years, in conditions you can imagine and some you can't. And like our soldiers, we never shy away from a challenge. So we'd like to honor our Armed Forces outstanding service during the Jeep military event. Get $500 military bonus cash toward a new 2012 Jeep vehicle. After so much time and service to others, we're giving our soldiers the recognition they deserve. Jeep. Hurry into your local Jeep dealer or visit Jeep.com for the special military offer, along with other great incentives on the full line of legendary Jeep vehicles. Offer available to active military and military reserve, and retired military and military reserve, with honorable discharge and 20 years of service within 6 months of discharge date on a retail purchase or lease. Excludes SRT models. See dealer for details. Jeep is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community. We're more than just great life insurance for the military family. We're your guide through life's challenges by offering the right products at the right time for the best price. Our Survivor Assistance Services team provides compassionate and caring advice and assistance for your family at a most critical time. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what's best for you. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war or aviation clauses. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
The CIO Council's recently released digital government strategy goes beyond mobile technology to rethink the way federal agencies manage information and interact with citizens. The shared platform approach not only addresses data, application, and device management, but also how to mitigate the threat of security breaches. Join AFSEA Bethesda on June 20th at the Bethesda North Marriott for a discussion about how agencies transform this policy into action. Register at afseabethesda.org/junebreakfast.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Marsha Mattson. Marsha is a partner at Mayer Brown LLP, and we're talking about transparency, data reporting, you know, the next wave. And when we took that break, Marsha, we said we're going to start talking about the Digital Accountability and Transparency Act of 2012. First, to set that up, let's just talk a little bit about, you know, what the Sarah panel recommended, and then what came out of the Recovery Act, a little bit more detail, and then move into the Data Act and talk about what it portends potentially for government contractors and for the government in general. And, you know, as we talked about in the first segment, Marcia, the Sarah panel did make recommendations with regard to data and the collection of data, reporting, et cetera. Can you sort of summarize what those were? To me, they were sort of common sense approach and didn't necessarily involve having to, you know, pass a law, I guess. So, yeah, have at it.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned earlier, the Sarah panel was frustrated in some respects by the difficulty of getting data to make recommendations about improving the procurement system. So we had included a number of recommendations, I think none of which were ultimately adopted with respect to data, but they were pretty basic things. For example, assigning responsibility for timely and accurate data collection to the agency head. The way FPDS was set up originally, and I believe this is still true today, the agency head actually is not responsible for the accuracy of the data. No one is. Ensuring that the agency workforces receive appropriate training so that they know that they are supposed to report the data in an accurate and timely manner. Establishing standard operating procedures and controls over system changes, basic internal controls, the kinds of things business does every day. Conducting internal reviews and audits to actually sample files and compare contract files to the FPDSNG data for accuracy, and then requiring GAO to do periodic audits of agency compliance. And you see, you know, flavors of these kinds of things in the Data Act as well. They're not particularly new or exciting ideas, but I think they do demonstrate that you don't have to have a whole new government agency in order to address some of these issues.
Right. Okay. So that sort of in those sort of process or reporting improvements that, you know, within the context of the executive branch operations, you know, were made, you know, maybe some looked at, whatever, potentially not fully adopted across government. But then we had, you know, the Recovery Act, and the Recovery Act brought us a whole new level of data reporting and sort of oversight. And, you know, just from what I recall, in terms of some of the interesting things you had to report, the number of jobs created. If you were getting Recovery Act funding as a government contractor, you would have to report the number of jobs saved or created as a result of that funding. There's also the first time, I think that's where we saw reporting of executive compensation and also that flowing down to subcontractors. Are there other things, or are those the couple of the key ones that...
Well, they had to, under the Recovery Act, which is really the foundation for the current legislation, as well as the new GAAP board, which we do need to mention, you know, it was the first time you really see the private sector being asked to report data that's actually in the government's hands, but that the government can't get in a usable form. So recipients of the data, contractors and grantees, had to report. They had to report, you know, basically using information that's in the acquisition system. They all had to be registered, for example. But the government couldn't aggregate it the way it needed to. So they went to the private sector and said, you have to provide information about where you're located, what the program is, what the contract number is, so that
a lot of basic
obligations
stuff there
can be tracked. Right.
Right. Yeah. And that's sort of the irony that historically it's always been the case that, or it seems like it's always the case that the government has all this data, but it doesn't have it in a usable form. So they actually turn to the private sector to have them report it back in a form that they may or may not actually, it's usable, they may or may not actually use, but it's always, it sort of seems to me that's something that's always been there. The government hasn't been able to figure out how to actually manage its own data. Is that fair to say?
Right, right. And, you know, one of the things, the other things that they did with the Recovery Act reporting was recipients of federal funds and contractors actually had to go to the agency to get, for example, accounting and appropriations codes so that they could include them with their reports, because it was easier to put those kinds of data on the reports coming in from the recipients than it was to get them from the federal agencies.
Right.
And so it made the private sector recipient responsible for getting that data from a government agency and working with its customer agency to get the data so it could be used by the recovery board.
Yeah, and I'm not speaking out of school. I mean, I work for the government. I saw this all the time as a major challenge for government agencies. And that's also why GSA and a lot of its BPAs right now, blanket purchase agreements, is including data reporting back on spending under the BPAs, because even though the government has that data, they don't have it in a form that is readily usable for, you know, managers to make good business decisions about, you know, their contracting. So it's kind of interesting. Can you tell me a little bit, you know, because we are going to move on to the GAT board, the Government Accountability Transparency Board, but which was created by an executive order by President Obama. But the precursor to that, it was the RAP board. You've mentioned them several times. Can you tell us a little bit about their function and their powers?
The RATB, some people call it the RAT board.
Recovery Act and Transparency Board.
Right, Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board was created to provide really special reporting and oversight in connection with the Recovery Act. And it was really given authority effectively to manage the program, to make sure the reporting worked. There were some of their requirements that overrode provisions of the FAR. In order to get data, they had a group of the agency inspectors general.
Yeah, that was on the board.
All on the board, right? So they could examine contractor records, and also put together programs and engaged contractors to develop systems to test the reporting and also to examine the data for efforts. With efforts to detect fraud, waste, and abuse. And the RAP board, according to its chairman, who's now retired, Earl Devaney, really, in his view, was very successful in using the data it had to identify and prevent fraud, waste, and abuse.
Right. And the board also had subpoena power, has subpoena power.
The board had, it had the IG type of subpoena power, and it also had testimonial subpoena power, the authority to compel testimony. It didn't end up using that authority.
Okay.
Apparently, the threat of it was sufficient.
Right. And so we have the RAT board, which came out of the Recovery Act. Now we come to, I think it was last year, the executive order that created the GAT board. We are truly talking government when we got all these acronyms.
All these acronyms, yeah. That's right.
So it's the Government Accountability and Transparency Board. That's a function of the executive branch right now. Is that right?
Right. The Recovery Act, the authority to expend Recovery Act funds expired at the end of the fiscal year in 2010, September 30, 2010. And the RATB's authority expires on September 30th, 2013. So the money expired, and then the authority to review the expenditures, collect the data, look for fraud, waste, and abuse expires next year.
Okay.
To succeed the RATB, the administration issued an executive order in June of last year to set up a Government Accountability and Transparency Board that was modeled on the RATB. But it wasn't set up via legislation. It was using executive, existing powers. It includes some of the IGs and some folks from OMB, as well as some representatives. I think there's one procurement representative on the board. And they've been really tasked with looking at how to take the processes and procedures and successes that the RATB accomplished and apply them on a government-wide basis.
Sort of a lesson.
A super one.
A lessons learned for whatever super board that they're going to potentially put in place, right? That's what it sounds like.
And to make some changes to the extent that they've got existing authority to do that.
Okay.
Government-wide basis.
Well, Marcia, right now we do have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Marcia Madsen, partner at Mayer Brown LLP. And we'll be talking about Transparency Reporting and the Digital Accountability and Transparency Act of 2012, which passed the House. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Han Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Han's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Han lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Han Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today. To win and deliver government healthcare contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition, from providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKsystems.com.
Today is the day to make the switch to decide you're going to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. I checked my alarm monitoring bill, and wow, I made the switch to Ackerman with no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month. Now I save $25 a month. That's $300 a year.
Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive 2 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk at FederalNewsRadio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Deborah Roth will be joined by Margie Moore and Kimberly Thompson from Women in Federal Law Enforcement to talk about WIFLE's upcoming conference.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Does your agency have an innovation strategy? Learn how innovation supports growth, cost reduction, and collaboration across government with Cesar Hidalgo, assistant professor at MIT, and J.R. Reagan, federal chief innovation officer and principal at Deloitte & Touche. Tune in with host Jane Norris on Deloitte's Fed Central, Thursday, June 7th and June 21st at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Rock that fanny pack, wearing those khakis last.
Kevin,
yeah?
What are you doing?
Just singing this sweet tune I heard on the radio this morning.
We need to get you HD Radio, man. Those are not the lyrics. If you were listening to that song in my Kia Optima with the UVO infotainment system and HD Radio, you'd hear all the lyrics with crystal clear digital sound quality. Plus the artist and song title even display on my UVO screen.
Then let's go for a ride and hope the fanny pack song comes on.
Voice-activated UVO infotainment system with HD Radio, now available in the Kia Optima.
We all fear having to use dirty public toilets, so three recently graduated Purdue University engineering students have invented a toilet seat washing machine. When you lower the lid, it's enveloped by a tightly sealed barrier. Then small amounts of the clean water from each flush are diverted into spinning lawn sprinkler-like blades.
And that builds up a lot of momentum, and that's how the blades clean off the entire seat. And we have wipers attached to that same mechanism, and the wipers dry off the seat.
Dimitri Sagamonian, a co-inventor of the Poseidon seat, says it works even without soap or added chemicals.
We've covered the seat with jelly, ground beef, sauce. We're trying peanut butter now, and the seat gets clean in an instant because you have all that water pressure.
Sagamonian says with no need for regular maintenance or electricity, its cost per use should be very low. More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Marcia Mattson. Marcia is a partner at Mayer Brown LLP, and we're talking data, transparency, reporting, what's it mean for the government, what's it mean for contractors. And, you know, first two segments, we've done sort of the big picture and talked a little historical context and Recovery Act and GATT board and all those sort of things, Marcia. You know, in this segment, we're really going to dig into the Digital Accountability and Transparency Act of 2012, which was proposed in the House and has passed the House. And, let's get right into it. Can you talk a little bit about the bill and what's in it? And there are some really interesting features to this bill.
Right. The bill has had an evolution. It was proposed last June, about the same time as the executive order. Was reported, I think, in the early fall from committee, and then wasn't really taken up by the House. And since it was reported, when it came to the floor, there was, a chairman's amendment, and it had substantial changes to it. But the some of the interesting provisions of the bill, it kind of has two major pieces. One is that it provides government-wide authority for collecting data. It's going to collect data. It's going to provide authority if it's approved, and it has also been introduced in the Senate. I think you mentioned that earlier. It would provide authority to collect data from any person that receives federal funds at any tier, and it would provide authority to collect from contractors or subcontractors at any tier, as well as state and local or tribal governments at any tier. So it's going to have like three streams of data coming in. You can sort of think of it as inbound data. So data from recipients, and the recipients have to report to the commission their receipt and use of federal funds, and they have lots of requirements. You know, where are they located? This is basic stuff that looks like the Recovery Act. You know, identification of the agency, identification of the recipient, identification of the award, the amount of funds, if it's a prime award or a sub award, and just basic information. But the information is going to be required by rulemaking. The other piece of this new statute, if it's enacted, would be the creation of a Federal Accountability and Spending Transparency Commission, or a FAST commission.
Right, and that's who the data gets reported
that's
to.
That's who the data gets reported to. It's an independent federal agency. Got rulemaking authority, and so the part of that authority would be used to establish what kinds of data are going to be collected. The statute provides for some basic things to be collected from recipients, and by rule, the FAST Commission could decide whatever else they think needs to be collected. And that's where the potential burdens are going to crop up here, because they can really collect whatever they think is necessary for the government to do its job.
Right. So, and who's members of this? Who will be members of
this
commission?
There are going to be five members of the commission. They're presidentially appointed. Only three can be from one political party. And they've got, authority to, they're going to have appropriated funds, a staff, an executive director.
So, does this, in your view, because I think some have observed, it seems to potentially duplicate authorities that are already out there? There are a bunch of IGs.
Right. It has, in fact, has many of the same authorities and from the same source, the Inspector General Act.
Okay. And so I guess what are the authors trying to get at if there's already this authority out there? I mean, there's investigative authority, there's auditors. Like, I know my previous life at GSA, There's an IG office that does both, you know, program audits, audits of contracts, and also investigations. It sounds like this is going to duplicate that. Is that a fair
right? But the commission certainly would have additional resources and authorities to do audits and investigations. I wanted to talk about the data coming in, because
sure,
it's going to come in from recipients. As I said, you know, what actually is going to get reported is going to be established by rule. So it's really whatever the commission thinks they need. Then the agencies, each executive agency has to report all obligations and expenditures. There are going to be consistent data items, you know, the format, the data standards are going to be set by the commission for the agency. So it gives you a government-wide standardized reporting platform and reporting elements. And there's lots of discussion in the technical press about, you know, what's the best approach to what are the best elements to use for that. And then the third piece is that the Treasury Department actually has to report disbursements of federal funds. So all of this data is going to come in, is going to be reported, and then the commission has the ability not only to set the standards for what's coming in and to set the rules for what's coming in, but then it gets interesting because they're going to be establishing a means to have all of that data analyzed to make comparisons so they can see exactly you know, who's getting what, where it is, how it's being used, where the overlaps are, et cetera.
And right, and this data is also going to be all be publicly available?
It's all publicly available. Okay. There's a section of the bill that provides for standard data elements, data standardization. Again, the commission can set rules. They're supposed to have widely accepted, non-proprietary, searchable, platform-independent elements, but it's up to them. They're going to pick, and they're going to impose these requirements government-wide and on all recipients.
And that, so that includes subcontractors at any tier?
Subcontractors at any tier, recipients at any tier. And then all of the information submitted by recipients and agencies is to be published online.
And I had just had another question. How is there any provision in the bill with regard to national security type items? Because, you know, if, you know, when the commission and what I guess one thing that folks talk about, right, is taking all this data and trying to use it to sort of analyze and figure out where there's fraud, waste, and abuse. At the same token, to the extent it's publicly available, there may be some data elements that could help someone figure out different ways that we are investing in various technologies and what that may or may not mean.
Well, certainly the bill provides an exception for anything that's classified.
Okay.
But the commission, I think, would have to flesh that out.
Right. Okay.
The bill creates something called the Federal Accountability Portal that's supposed to carry, it's sort of the, if the data is coming in, this is sort of outbound. It's going to carry out all of these functions. It's going to incorporate all of the data. It's going to combine it. It's going to make it available. And, you know, part of the intended use is to permit executive agencies, including the IGs and law enforcement agencies, to track federal awards and federal recipients and to detect and report fraud, waste, and abuse. So the data is coming in. It's going to be collected. It's going to be analyzed. It's going to have these common data elements, and then it's going to go in the portal, and it's going to be trackable for various purposes. But an important purpose is to track fraud, waste, and abuse issues, or to identify them in advance.
Well, let's talk a little bit about more about that when we come back, Marcia. But we do have to take our last break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Marcia Mattson, partner at the law firm of Mayer Brown, LLP. And we're talking about the Data Act and fraud, waste, and abuse. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Pooling together really rewards. Van pools have now been added to the popular pool rewards program. If you currently drive alone to work and can carpool at least 2 days a week or form a new van pool, you may qualify for a cash incentive or reduced commuting costs. Visit commuterconnections.org. Click on pool rewards to find out more. Need to find others to rideshare with? Commuter Connections provides free ride matching services too. Pool rewards. It pays to rideshare. Some restrictions apply. Visit commuterconnections.org today to get started.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files in all these different formats, then 20 years later somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How do we enhance national competitiveness? What about getting big things done in government? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week and find out. Hear from government executives Gene Dodaro, Michael Astru, Admiral Robert Papp, Aaron Connaughton, Tish Long, and Stephen Kempf next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, MetLife, and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Reusing government personal property can save taxpayers millions of dollars. It's also a requirement that federal agencies acquire excess personal property first before purchasing new items. If you're wondering how to acquire excess personal property or transfer your agency's excess personal property, turn to GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. GSA offers programs and online tools such as GSA Access to help reuse and recycle items ranging from office equipment and furniture to computers, scientific devices, heavy machinery, airplanes, boats, and much more. Let GSA help you get the most out of the government's resources while saving money and protecting the environment. Remember, when you no longer need it, someone else does. For more information on reusing and recycling your excess personal property, visit GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. gsa.gov/reusecmp. That's gsa.gov/reusecmp.
What do the Geico Gecko and a lot of federal employees have in common? They have a great sense of humor and good comedic timing. Come see for yourself at DC's Funniest Fed Competition, sponsored by Geico. You'll see the DC area's funniest group of federal employees compete with their best stand-up comedy. The semifinals take place June 13th at the Virginia State Theater. The finals are June 22nd at the Lincoln Theater in DC. For tickets, go to funniestfed.com. That's funniestfed.com.
Please join Tom Temm and June 12th to 2 p.m. for a dynamic panel on meeting your telework goals using client virtualization solutions, sponsored by GovConnection, HP, and VMware. You'll hear from agency panelists Danette Campbell, Anil Carmel, Rick Colgate, Dr. Emma Garrison-Alexander, and industry expert David Young from VMware, discussing telework policy drivers, mandates, and updates, and the technology deployed at various agencies to support the telework mission, June 12th at 2 p.m. The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for June is the Foundation for the Advancement of Music and Education. This local nonprofit's dedicated to the accessibility of music, arts, and education for children and young adults in the greater Washington area. There's power in music, and together with FAME, your monetary and instrument donations can help build strong communities. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Marcia Madsen. Marcia is a partner at the law firm of Mayer Brown LLP, and we're talking about the Data Act and transparency reporting, fraud, waste, and abuse. And Marcia, just to pick up on, you know, the last few comments in the last segment where we did start focusing on, you know, one of the this new commission's jobs is going to be to take all this data and try to analyze it with some sort of super program, I guess, to figure out where they can identify indications of fraud, waste, and abuse, and then I guess go, you know, look at that to see if that's actually the case. You know, is there, we're sort of in this age of increased oversight over and above what has been in the past. And you can use the cliches about pendulum swinging from the 90s to now. It seems to me there's a sense of, there's a trust issue here going on. Is that a fair observation?
I think it's fair. I don't think it's new.
Okay. Well, tell me, why isn't it new?
Well, let's see. What do we have? The mandatory disclosure rule, FAPIS. I mean, there's a lot of...
You're making my point. It's the
a lot of oversight.
Right. We're in the age of oversight now between, the mandatory disclosure rule, FAPIS, all those things.
Amendments to the False Claims Act.
It gets to a point like, what is the return on all this oversight?
I think that's one of the interesting things about the legislation. It's, as I said, kind of got two big parts. One is sort of a good government mission, which is get the data that the agencies are having trouble with, make it available, make it usable so people can make better decisions.
Right,
and
standardize
the other one,
it. Which
right,
makes sense.
Right. Standardize it. And, you know, again, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, if you find out there are duplicate federal programs and you only need one instead of two because you have the data, that's a good
discovery.
That would
be a good thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. The other piece, though, is really this new commission will have the authority to, serve as the authoritative government source for information about federal spending and to coordinate and conduct oversight of federal funds in order to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse. So, you know, someone might look at this and say, we're going to have, a super IG here. The commission is charged with...
But even more than that, Marcia, when you say it that way, it's almost, I begin to wonder, what becomes of the role of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy? I mean, if this is going to be oversight of all these things, depending how you develop the reporting requirements and the mechanisms and all that thing, you can clearly shape the way the system is supposed to
work. The way the system works, the way the rules look, right.
So, I think there's an issue there that, when you describe it that way, I hadn't really thought of it, but it seems to me it can have a big, big impact in how the system actually functions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that issue's been there. Again, when you have the emphasis in your procurement system on the back end of it, on investigations and on prosecutions, prosecutors bringing cases under the False Claims Act, they're the ones who are interpreting the rules. The commission is charged with identifying potential criminal activity and referring it to the appropriate officials for supporting ongoing criminal investigations, the prosecutions, in developing means to use the data, test it to see if there are aspects that could identify potential fraud. They're supposed to make recommendations to executive agencies on how to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse based on what they're seeing in the data. And by the way, it's not clear in the bill, I think, whether if they make a recommendation and an agency doesn't want to do it.
What happens? Agency?
It says an agency can submit a report to the president about their views. It doesn't say they won't have to do it.
That's kind of interesting because that's sort of like that's sort of predetermines the decision, right? Nobody wants to write that memo to the president saying, "Well,
right,
I didn't follow."
Right.
It gives that's a huge amount of power right there.
The commission is going to have most of the authorities, and particularly it has all of the investigative authorities that the inspector generals have. And then there's some interesting things, and I know we're short on time, and I just want to point to a couple of them.
We got a few minutes.
Well, one of them is matching program authority, which sounds like deadly dull stuff, but under the IG Act currently, there are restrictions on taking data and using computerized tools, using IT resources, and comparing data to data held by private sources, non-federal sources, particularly as it involves individuals. This legislation contains several exemptions to those matching requirements that would allow this commission to match data with non-federal sources that they have access to in order to determine whether Roger Waldron's wife's second cousin had ever been suspended or debarred, for example. Now, one could argue, like, who cares? But it's not exactly clear what they're going to be looking for, and that's pretty expansive authority.
Okay, so now you got me worried.
I don't know.
I don't have a second cousin who's been suspended or debarred. But I guess that I just makes me wonder where this will all lead. I mean, it sounds like it's got many different facets to it. One of the things that I think we did you mentioned you wanted to talk about was the penalties for material omissions that are involved in this in terms
of reporting? Well, on the reporting side for recipients, there are penalties, significant penalties, up to $250,000 for material omissions. Material is not defined, so that's going to be up to the commission to define what a material omission or misstatement is. You know, if it's a false statement, it could also raise False Claims Act issues. Another little interesting piece, you had asked about Paperwork Reduction Act earlier. Currently, the Paperwork Reduction Act, the only real exceptions to it are basically for the government if there's a criminal investigation or there's a civil action where the U.S. is a party. The commission is going to have an exception where they're doing any review or any audit, investigation, or inspection, or particular investigation or inspection. It's not limited to specific cases and specific acts. So if they're doing a broad review, of the example of a series of federal programs or a government-wide investigation, that would not be subject to the Paperwork Reduction Act.
And we do have about a minute left, Marcia. I wanted to give you a chance to sort of sum up what we ought to think about in the context of this. You know, there's some, I guess, good parts of the bill in terms of the idea of standardization of data that I think would save everybody money, government and industry. But there seems to be some other areas where there may be some concerns in terms of, you know, the far-reaching aspects of it. I'll leave it to you to provide the last comments.
Right. Well, thanks, Roger. I think the question here is balance. Obviously, the government could work better if government decision makers had better information, but in terms of all of these extra investigative authorities and actions, it's really not clear why this is necessary. It's not clear that agency IGs are falling down on the job. They've got a lot of resources. There's other compliance regimes. We just talked about FAPIS. We talked about the mandatory disclosure rule. It's just not clear why you have to have a whole new independent agency with all of these additional resources. And it's not clear that anyone's asking how this is going to affect the government's costs and whether all this information will really contribute to the ability of the government to make better procurement, in our case, procurement decisions, and perform better management. Getting more user-friendly data is one thing. All of these extra investigative authorities, which is not clear where they're really headed, something else.
Right, and you could get that better user-friendly data, you know, I guess through some fundamental changes like that the SARA panel sort of was focused on at the time, right?
Yep.
Right, okay.
Sounds fair.
Hey, Marcia, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
I do want to thank my guest, Marcia Madsen, partner at Mayer Brown LLP. This is Roger Waldron, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.